And when things aren't all aligned, and that happens a lot for us clinically.
Physical exam is not good for detecting or diagnosing pulmonary edema.
So, Mike, I don't know if you chose this topic to gaslight all the people on Twitter.
Welcome, everyone, to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. This is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks again for joining us for another CCPEM podcast. We're so appreciative and grateful that you are listening to our discussion. Another great topic we're going to talk about. We're not going to do a deep dive on the latest, greatest research article, but we are going to launch into a discussion on a very familiar topic, but it is based on a great review article that just got published within the last several days in JAMA. But before diving into that and launching into our discussion for another educational topic, as you know well, I have to bring in the superstars here on CCPEM, Dr. Rob Rodriguez, Dr. John Greenwood, and Dr. Peter W. Gentlemen, it's been a few weeks since we recorded our last podcast. How have things been in the interim? Let's start all the way west with Dr. Rodriguez.
Things are going great. We've had outstanding weather here in Southern California. I am also looking forward to two graduations in the next few months. My son's graduating from college and my daughter's graduating from law school. So yeah, lots of fun to look forward to.
That is a huge congrats to both of them and to you, Rob, for getting them through, just simply providing, I'm assuming, some of the resources to assist them. But really, really great news. Our congratulations to them and all the exciting things that they are going to do. Let's jump back across the U.S. and check in Philly with Dr. Greenwood.
Hey, guys. Good to hear from you. Things are going really well in Philadelphia. I have to say, for those of you listeners in the Northeast who have been dealing with some extra snow, the emergency department's been busy with some snow emergencies. We had a couple post-cardiac arrest patients that came in with two STEMIs. These patients really didn't have any past medical history. So please be careful out there, stay safe, and otherwise, looking forward to the spring.
Outstanding, outstanding. Well, hopefully they all did well, John, and I'm sure in your area of expertise and your center of resuscitation and all the great things you're doing, they couldn't be in better hands. All right, well, purposefully, let's now head south to Dr. W, where undoubtedly there must be some festival in New Orleans to talk about.
So, and that festival is, in fact, Mardi Gras. And so we just had carnival season in New Orleans. So everybody's universally recovering from Fat Tuesday and spectacular weather, spectacular crowds and events.
All right. Well, by the time we record our next one, Peter, we will be looking forward to what the new festival is in New Orleans. All right, let's turn our attention to what you all came to listen to, and that's some more discussion on important topics that impact our delivery of care, resuscitation of critically ill patients, either in the ED, perhaps on the floor and are decompensating, or are in the intensive care unit. And we're going to talk about fluids. Not the necessarily administration of fluids, but overall an assessment of patients that may come in either to the ED or already are hospitalized in the ICU, and the assessment of volume overload. And it is based on an article, as I mentioned, that just got published 3 days ago in JAMA, published online. And it's part of a really great series that JAMA puts together, the Rational Clinical Examination Series. And this lead author was Dr. Drum. And it's titled, Does This Patient Have Volume Overload? The Rational Clinical Examination Series in JAMA. I think this particular advanced audience, as you're listening to us, you really know those signs and symptoms well of patients who come in and may have volume overload. They may report dyspnea, dyspnea on exertion, weight gain, peripheral edema. And as you examine them, you're looking for signs that correlate with those symptoms, such as pulmonary arouse, JVD, or peripheral edema. And we know that there are certain inherent conditions that place patients at risk of having volume overload. Cardiac conditions, chronic kidney disease, cirrhosis, and what we've talked about many times over on the podcast, the potential for excess fluid administration. And our ability to accurately assess whether someone is volume overloaded does affect our clinical decision making, does affect how we manage patients. And we've talked at length as well about the harms of potential over aggressive fluid resuscitation, worsening pulmonary edema, and may ultimately lead to the need to initiate mechanical ventilation. Well, the authors in this particular study do a great job going into the detail about some pathophysiology and explaining how we see peripheral edema, how pulmonary edema is caused, the assessment of, say, elevated right atrial pressure, labs such as BNP, along with some symptom management that we'll defer you to that article to review, but we think that you know that fairly well. Now, in terms of evaluating signs, I do think there's some important pearls that we want to draw out and just make sure we're all on the same page as we then launch into really why this article was put together and assessing what are the sensitivities and specificities of those signs and symptoms that help us really make a determination of whether someone's volume overloaded. So, Dr. W, I'm going to turn things back to you. In terms of the signs, we're looking for elevated jugular venous pressure. Many of us are taking our ultrasound to the bedside, and the article does point out a few pearls. Let me turn to you to kind of bring us all up to speed on what we're specifically looking for with those assessments.
Yeah, you got it, Mike. And so, speaking for our group in particular, we're keen on the utility of ultrasound early and often and doing it serially to assess your resuscitative measures. So, who would we do this to? Somebody with a rapid respiratory rate excess of 20 breaths per minute, those people with low blood pressures, those people with very rapid heart rates, and particularly in those people with low saturations or the suspicion of peripheral edema, crackles on lung exam, S3, that kind of thing. So, how do we use the ultrasound looking at three different areas, and those areas being lung parenchyma, the IJ, and then the IVC? And so, when we look at lung parenchyma, we're going to use a linear probe. The patient's going to be in a semi-recumbent position, and we're going to scan at the intercostal spaces. And what are we going to look for there as we scan anteriorly and then laterally? We're looking for B lines, and we're looking for three or more B lines within one intercostal space. So you're going to have to check more than one intercostal space. We know that the lung pocus really doesn't correlate directly with the CVP, but those B lines in a symptomatic patient does suggest pulmonary vascular congestion. So we also know that the B line can be present in ARDS, in anything that causes a pulmonary infiltrate like pneumonia, and in those patients in trauma with pulmonary contusion. Now we shift from the lung parenchyma to using our ultrasound to look at the IJ, looking for jugular venous pulsations. And we examine the IJ with the patient in a semi-reclined 30 to 45 degree angle. We're going to again reach for our high frequency linear probe in a transverse orientation to the base of the neck, just above the clavicle. We're going to measure maximum and minimal IJ AP diameters during the respiratory cycle. If we see a large diameter with less than 30% variation, so less than a third variation, suggests elevation of right atrial pressure. Okay? And then the other will follow up with the IVC, the inferior vena cava. We'll perform that with the patient in the supine position if they can tolerate that. We'll measure it approximately 2 centimeters distal to the right atrial junction at the end of expiration. We're looking for a dilated IVC greater than 2.1 centimeters with less than 50% inspiratory collapse. This is suggestive of elevated central venous pressures. And then a small IVC with collapse that is greater than 50% suggests a normal central venous pressure.
Thanks so much, Peter. The outstanding pearls there to make sure we're level set and all have an understanding of what we're specifically looking at with POCUS. I think we all do a great job examining, listening for pulmonary rales, perhaps weighing the patient. We're looking for signs of peripheral edema. But these specific measures, you really helped remind us what the key numbers and measurements that we're looking for. All right, well, Dr. Greenwood, let's get to the second half of this article where they talk about, they don't label it a meta-analysis, but really, I feel that that was their intent to now say, well, how good are these signs and symptoms of volume overload? What could we count on, in essence, when we're in the ED or in the ICU to make this assessment? Perhaps you can just let us know what did they do?
So the authors here did basically a systematic review to look at these clinical exam findings and what is their sensitivity and specificity with the diagnosis of volume overload. And they included 40 articles. These are original research articles that were included of almost 11,500 patients. And this was from 26 studies in the ED, and those are patients who presented with a complaint of dyspnea, eight studies who were admitted to the medical floor, the ICU, four studies who were presenting for outpatient right heart catheterization, so presumptively patients with chronic heart failure, and then one study urgent care clinic and another in an outpatient clinic. And when they combined about 5,000 patients, they found that jugular venous distension had a pretty high specificity of 92% with a likelihood ratio of over four, but a low sensitivity of only 35% and a likelihood ratio less than one. Compare that to pulmonary rails, and the specificity was again pretty high at 81% with a likelihood ratio of 2.7, compared to a pretty low sensitivity of 56% and a likelihood ratio of 0.5. Followed up on that is the lower extremity edema physical exam finding that had a slightly less specificity of 80% and a likelihood ratio of 2 with a sensitivity of 44%. And again, a likelihood ratio somewhere around 0.6. Now, as far as radiographic findings, so those are things that patients might have gotten in the clinic or in the hospital, such as a chest X-ray. Pulmonary vascular congestion on the chest X-ray had a specificity of 91%, with the highest likelihood ratio of almost six, compared to a sensitivity of 51%. Now, in this study, the authors also looked at point of care ultrasound, and of the ultrasound findings, B-lines, absence of B-lines, IVC collapsibility, and increased JVP. A few stood out as probably having the highest sensitivity. So, not having B lines had a sensitivity of 93%. So, if you're going through doing your ultrasound exam and there's no B lines, that's pretty good indication that your patient probably is likely not to have volume overload, although there are some caveats, of course. And then followed that up with abnormal IVC collapsibility. And I think this is something we use fairly often when trying to assess volume status. The specificity there was almost 80% and a likelihood ratio of 3.9. So in this study, it performed fairly well to identify patients with volume overload. And lastly, when we're talking about the lab testing, certainly run a lot of diagnostic tests. But one of them that we particularly pay close attention to, which is the BNP, an elevated BNP had a specificity of 87% with a likelihood ratio of almost seven. So probably something to pay attention to.
Thanks so much, John. Really helpful in taking us through those some surprising findings. And I think the authors, in their discussion of this systematic review, they really draw out that in terms of the most useful test to identify volume overload, at least per their findings, it is that elevated BNP that we would send from a laboratory standpoint, and then vascular congestion seen on plain film. Whereas the most useful tests in excluding volume overload were a low BNP followed by the absence of B lines on POCUS. So very useful from a from an ultrasound standpoint to have that be looking for signs of volume overload. But with any type of study we're looking at, we always can pick out some important limitations that we should be aware of. So Dr. Rodriguez, let us know what your thoughts are on some of the limitations of what these authors did in this very helpful article.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I was involved in a couple of these studies, and notably one when I was a resident. And that relates to the first limitation, which is most of these studies used expert opinion to determine whether volume overload was present or not. In other words, they used a kind of a review panel as their gold standard. When I was a resident in the 1960s, we actually did a study in which we used a true gold standard in which we placed pulmonary artery catheters in heart failure patients. And the results of that study are included in this report. But the results of that study showed that physical exam findings were not at all sensitive. That's a really good gold standard, pulmonary capillary wedge pressure, which was the reference standard that we used. And physical exam had very low sensitivity. So that's one take-home point. Another limitation is that across studies, they had variable patient acuity. Some patients were really sick, others were not so sick. So that leads to high variability in terms of the estimation of those sensitivities and specificities. There was also a lot of variance in the exclusion criteria that they used for these studies. And the techniques for exam maneuvers and the POCUS exam were also variable. So, as expected, different teams of investigators used different methods. Finally, another limitation is that BNP at this time did not adjust for age, obesity, or chronic kidney disease, all factors that can affect your BNP value.
Thanks so much, Rob. Really helpful there in going through those limitations. And let me just kind of restate what the authors have as take-home messages in terms of, does this patient have volume overload after a thoughtful review and analysis? And in terms of the highest specificity, the most useful test to identify patients with volume overload, once again, a high BNP. And then when you look at your chest X-ray, look at those plain films, is peribronchial cuffing present and other signs of vascular congestion, that hazy perihilar infiltrates that would suggest volume overload. And then in terms of the most sensitive of excluding volume overload, it's a low BNP. And then you're doing your point of care ultrasound, looking for those B lines that Peter educated us on a short time ago. The absence of B lines on POCUS really was the most useful in excluding patients that had volume overload. But let's go a little bit further. So that is the article. Really, congratulations to Dr. Drum and his colleagues on a really great rational clinical examination in JAMA, helpful addition to that series, and really giving us some very useful information that we can take back to the ED and or ICU. But I want to turn to my colleagues here. So Peter, let me circle back to you. You gave us some pointers on focus, et cetera. But let's evolve this conversation just a little bit in terms of fluid and volume overload. Your thoughts?
Yeah, in looking at this, my greatest thought is remaining humble as a clinician, right? And understanding that the sensitivity and specificity of our physical exam, even our laboratory tests, as well as, our chest X-ray, all of those things can have wacky measures. And when things aren't all aligned, and that happens a lot for us clinically, but when things aren't all aligned, we really need to think about other diagnoses and competing diagnoses so that we're not just hanging our hat on a fluid overload state and giving somebody buckets of Lasix. So we need to be cautious with that.
Great points there, Peter. Rob, I'm going to turn to you next, and then John's going to wrap us up here as we drive home towards the end of this podcast.
Yeah, so my take-home points are that physical exam is not good for detecting or diagnosing pulmonary edema. While I do tend to glance at the neck and listen to the lungs, the absence of JVD and the absence of crackles does not in any way rule out heart failure for me. The other point is that history, that they didn't talk a lot about history and the sensitivity of history for pulmonary edema and for heart failure. But we're so used to turning to a test to determine whether somebody's in heart failure and so forth, that we often underemphasize history. So one thing that I learned from the various studies that I participated in is that history is invaluable. So you got to really return your focus to history and these other two tests, notably the POCUS for B-lines and the BNP. Do a little more history, and if you really want to rule out pulmonary edema or volume overload, send a BNP or do a POCUS.
Really love those pearls, Rob, from both you and Peter. Now, John, you're wrapping us up. Bring us home here in terms of thoughts on volume overload here.
Oh man. So, Mike, I don't know if you chose this topic to gaslight all the people on Twitter, because this is gonna like really get some people talking. I love what Peter and Rob said. And Rob, I am going to need that citation that you have, because I tell people all the time, I appreciate your physical exam, but it doesn't matter, because there's so much more going on. These patients are so complex. So if I can have that study, I just tried to find it on Google Scholar. But one of the questions I really have, and this gets to Rob's point, is okay, so there is some lower extremity edema, but does that tell me that they're volume overloaded? Not necessarily. But the real question is, so what are you going to do about it? So what does that mean? Does that mean you're going to start a diuretic for that patient, or does that patient need an inotrope because they're in low output heart failure? The fact of being volume overloaded doesn't tell me what my next step is, which is what's the intervention? And that's based on the cause. Right. And so that's where ultrasound, again, that helps me make a decision. What am I going to do as my next step to treat this patient if they're short of breath and they have volume overload on my ultrasound? And then where the ultrasound also helps me is to identify patients who possibly have isolated left heart failure or right heart failure, because those patients are very different. And you can have a patient who comes in with right heart failure whose lungs are completely clear, but they have massive venous congestion. And that's the problem, and you need to start diuresing that patient. So the question of so what is important. What do I want to do about it is number two. And then three, how am I going to get there? And then four, I'm going to read Rob's manuscript on volume overload.
Wonderful pearls and wonderful statements, John. And we're going to certainly have that as a soundbite, I think, for this episode. Rob's comments about physical exam is worthless. N not having said that, we all know it is extremely important, and doing a proper physical exam, all four of us are going to align with that. But the limited utility in confirming volume overload, I think we all recognize. And this has been, once again, as always, a very, very helpful, super fun discussion. Really, thoughts once again on this particular article. Our congrats to Dr. Drum and his colleagues. Just a really nice addition to the Rational Clinical Exam series. We would encourage all of you to go ahead and pull this article. It's a great read. It is not too long, and so it certainly can serve with a number of pearls that you're able to talk with fellows, residents, even students rotating with you in the ED and the ICU. So, with that, we're going to draw this podcast to a close. We're so thankful once again that you tuned into CCPEM to listen to us. We've got some great topics upcoming over the next few weeks. Stay tuned. We will look forward to talking to you on our next podcast. Bye for now.